Hello and welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name's Adam Cook and I'm your host for this episode 434. I'm not here alone and I do have a massive thank you to make to Mr. Christopher Hyde. Thank you for holding the fort down, mate.
That's all right, mate. Any time. Thankfully,
oh, okay. Well, I'll be
the
off.
Guys that were with me were... Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to come back, but yeah, no, the guys are pretty well behaved, so it was quite easy. They did as they were told for most for the most part, I think. So yeah, it was good fun.
Okay, did Chris?
Good to have you back, mate.
Thank you very much, Chris White. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, Dad. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine, Adam. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. You know, I'm as you find me, I think is the easiest way of saying it at the moment.
We have missed you.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. A bit, okay. Well, also here, no, Adam Carroll. Adam Carroll, how are you? All right, mate?
Good evening. Great. I was just about to drop in there and I leave it off.
I didn't get to say last week because I wasn't here, but thank you. Your hair, mate. It's second week running.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's a change.
Yep. Change is as good as a rest.
Do you like hair? Do you miss hair?
Mick Fraser, how are you? You all right?
That's ridiculous hair envy over here.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm not
happy.
No?
With Adam's hair. I can't grow hair.
You're just not happy.
Look at this.
Okay.
The rest just doesn't grow, and then he comes on every week looking like $1 million.
Okay.
Oh, thanks, Mick.
It's
one like one of those up down head looks, shouldn't you? Like where the hair grows, yeah, the head upside down.
It over, yeah. Yeah. Still want to Photoshop that.
It's worth saying, by the way, for those watching in the future, we are live on YouTube at the moment. You might be watching the archive of this. We're live.
What could go wrong?
Nothing went wrong last week when I was behind the camera producing it, but now I have buttons. It's
if it goes wrong this week, we know why.
Well, it's definitely because I'm here and not just pressing buttons. We've got people in the chat. We are going to read out some of the chat as it happens, but we're still aware that, of course, this is also just an audio podcast. But yeah, hopefully we can do it live, and hopefully like maybe in a week or two we can do it live for everyone, because currently it is, and I'll get the plug in very early, it's for our Patreons, and they basically pay for early access, and you can do that at patreon.com/godisageek. For $1 or a pound, you can get access to this, basically this live service. Well, I mean, not this live service, just live stuff in general. But it's time to talk about some video games, because lots of smaller ones are happening nowadays, aren't they? But I don't know. It Takes Two. I was going to try a segue, but I don't think I'm going to be able to get there. But It Takes Two is that a small game? It seems like a smaller game to me.
Small game, yeah, compared to others, but it's a pretty ambitious little beautiful small game.
Well, Chris has shown his hand quite early there.
Is it an indie? It Takes Two. I know very little about it, considering we've had videos all over the site.
Yeah, no, it's an indie, but it is Joseph Fares' studio Hazelight are behind it, and EA are publishing it. And I found it interesting because the way this worked is that myself and Chris White went to a digital preview event, which is all the rage now, and there was a sort of presentation from Joseph Fares and his PR manager, and then we went off and played the game just between the two of us co-op. I've since played it through the same thing with Chris Hyde. And Chris White, actually, you got a one-on-one with Fares at a later date, which I found quite interesting because there was a few of them. And I noticed that a lot of what he said in the presentation, he kind of reiterated. And I don't want to be that guy, but it suggests to me that although he seems very like, I'm going to say whatever the swear word I want, I'm not sure it's completely that. Because he said to you, didn't he, about, he mentioned how people have a certain opinion of EA, and he did that in the presentation as well. And I don't know. Do you know what? It's almost irrelevant. We should talk about the actual video game. Chris White, as if people don't know from your write-up, what do you think?
Well, it's very rarely like you're blown away like that. I think within the first half an hour, you could see this was something different. Like, it wasn't just a normal platformer. And like, A Way Out, as good as it was, it did have flaws. Like, they were like, in our interview, he said that at the time it was him and a few interns. So whilst they were talented, it was still a small studio, whereas now they've improved everything and they've managed to create this, but it's still a massive step up to what that was. Like, the thing about platformers is they can look fancy and they can have a neat little idea behind them, but if the gameplay isn't tight enough, then it just won't work. And I mean that was evident from the start, wasn't it? Like, as soon as you start moving around and you're jumping around and it feels amazing to play. And then you've got like the way they work co-op into it, and they manage to throw loads of ideas that you throw out, and none of them are kind of like one-off ideas, that they kind of last throughout the section and they work very well. And the way you work together to pull it off, like the hammer, end of the hammer and the nails, where you would throw nails into a wall and I would use my hammer to swing from the nails, or you would use a nail to kind of pin a platform as it moved. You pin it up there so that I could then jump over.
Yeah.
And that's kind of constant throughout. And then you've got like this, the random bits that don't even need to happen. Like the torture chamber, which is, it sounds like pretty horrific, but it really isn't. Where you can walk into this torture chamber.
Lovely,
and then,
wonderful torture chamber.
Yeah. And then you're stuck. And then the other person on the outside could press buttons on the side of it to like electrocute you or like throw you in the air. And like, it doesn't need to be there. And you could literally miss it. You could walk straight past it. And there's loads of them in there. And then there's the mini games, which are, in total, there'll be 25 when you play the full release. But just stupid, like a tug of war, like between you and your mate, or the whack-a-mole, which was fucking flipping asshole.
I don't know if we need to address why everyone's not swearing all of a sudden. Is it
because we've all found God?
I may well be off then. See you later.
But no, it's just lovely. It's just a lot of fun to play. It does look incredible. And then there's so many like little Easter eggs, like references to loads of other games. And there's one bit we've purposely missed out of the footage and talked about, because it has the potential to be like a game of the year moment. Like, it's just so like unexpected, and especially where it happens. But like, there's references to loads of games on Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation. It's just brilliant, and like, it's just a lot of fun. And the story as well, platformers don't tend to have kind of this kind of story. It's just, there's a lot going on and it all kind of works well together.
It's worth mentioning as well, in the chat, we're going to read questions as we're live. Steve Chambers says it looks quite pretty because they're seeing footage of what it's actually you and I playing, Chris. I'm assuming it's cross-gen. It's actually not. I mean, it's cross-gen in as much as if you buy a PlayStation 4 game, you can play it on your PlayStation 5 via backwards compatibility. It is something that you and I, Chris White, noted when we were playing it, is how good-looking a game it is, right? You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, the kind of detail in every little thing you see, like, whether it's just, like, the wooden flooring, like, it's silly, but there's just so much detail in everything, and, like, it's essentially, you're shrunk down, so it does remind me of like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids by the things you kind of see at that size.
Yeah.
And the amount of detail in like everything. But then the lighting as well, like it looks beautiful, especially when you're in the tree and you see the kind of beehive and the way that's illuminated. And like, it's just a very kind of magical game as well. And it's not a platform in the sense it's like kiddified. I don't want to make that sound bad towards games like Mario.
No, but
and it's kind of presented to grown-ups because of like the challenges that it presents. Like, some of the teamwork you need to put in, you wouldn't be able to pull this off with like my daughter. I don't think, even though she's pretty good at games, she would struggle with it. But that's not a downside. Like, the fact that they give away a friend pass for every game means you can literally play with any one of your mates and they don't even have to buy it.
He mentioned at the presentation about the difficulty, because a lot of people were asking that question, like, because obviously the theme, the story of the game is that a couple are getting a divorce, and that it kind of comes to life in a Pixar style because of the little girl and the daughter in the relationship. And so that he said it's like, you know, it's therapy. You know, people were joking about how it's almost like couples therapy. You know, it's people playing together. But the gameplay is such that I think he himself said, if you don't know how to control a game's camera, like with the stick, you're going to have a rough time. Just for those watching the video version, the torture chamber's on screen right now. But Chris, I don't want to say if you're a gamer, but you know what I mean, right? It's
Like my wife, she doesn't play a lot of games. Like, she's very specific what she plays. Like, Animal Crossing she played for over 500 hours of. Outside of that, she reads, there's these games which are like text-based adventures on the Switch. So it's all, it's not like platformers she plays. So I wouldn't be able to play this with her. In fact, I tried to play A Way Out with her when I reviewed it, and it didn't go well. So she's not a gamer. She doesn't play a lot of games, and she would struggle with it because she doesn't understand the concept of like moving the camera around when you run, whereas it is all second nature to all of us. And it's still got mass appeal.
Mm. And Chris Hyde, we played through this as well, didn't we, over a couple of nights?
Yeah. So you said, here, go in here, go in this torture chamber. And I just got like turned into nuts and stuff. I would echo a lot of what Chris has said, to try and kind of pick out the things in addition to what Chris has said that I found are really good. Like, for me, the sometimes with co-op platformers, they're single player platformers that you can just play with two people. And this is very much, there's a reason for this being a co-op platformer, without it just being because of the story of there being a couple that split up. You know, Chris touched on it in terms of some of the elements that kind of you have to work together to progress, but also the way in which they've really thought about the boss fights, for example, and how you have to do different things together to achieve different things that you hadn't done before to overcome a boss together. It's not one of you kind of fighting a boss or both of you just chipping away at health. You have to do things together to beat bosses or to get over, certain sections. That's very, very clever. And there was quite a few moments when, certainly when me and you were playing, Adam, we were like, I mean, I know you'd played it before I was like, this is really clever. And you're right, Chris, you use the same, get an ability, don't you? Each of you gets an ability that complements the other one for like a certain part of the stage, and you have to work together. But then it gets, and there's different ways you use it. Like, it's not just the same thing 10 times.
Yeah,
you use it in different ways. So that's really clever. But then they bin it and they give you another kind of mechanic to use for another section of a chapter, which is brand new and is fully co-op, and one person's doing one thing and one person's doing the other. Because the one thing that Adam was straight away when we started playing was like, I want to be this other character, because it's a completely different, you're going to go around the platforming sections in a different way, you're going to be doing different things during boss fights. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting, like how in a platform where you literally have different roles and so many different ideas throughout the story. And it's only we've only previewed the first two chapters and the amount of ideas.
He said it was 12 to 14 crazy. Hours long. But he also said
that's continuous, didn't he? Like, it doesn't stop. He said that
That new idea thing.
Same throughout.
Like, one of the things he said in the presentation was...
Have you seen the trailer as well? Like, you see the microphones like chomping at you, and then there's joysticks and all sorts. Sorry, but yeah.
No.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
He said, I don't know. I initially thought it was just a kind of almost a braggy thing or a joke, but he said there were people in the development team that were spent like a whole year making this one thing, and then it's like bang gone in seconds. And I think, like, for example, the hang gliding section, is possibly that. Like, I think you could. I don't think you can fail that bit, but I felt like that hang gliding section is an example of a very small thing they put in the game that you probably will never. I mean, you don't see that. You know, the first time you get like the proper wow moment is when you get the hammer and the nails between you, and that is a genuine wow moment. And I don't think you're ever going to see that again. I think there's another 10 hours, potentially 12 hours of this game. I don't think you're ever going to see that mechanic again. Maybe similar things or themes, but I don't think you're ever actually going to see them, you know, because they're very much of that section, aren't they? They're a part of that section of the game and no more. We've got a question here.
It's testament.
Yeah, go on. Okay, go on, Chris. No, go on.
I was just going to say, I think it's testament, like, certainly when me and you were playing, and obviously you had played it with Chris before, but the amount of times I was, like, going, like, speaking out loud, that's so clever.
Yeah.
I don't normally just shout out that random kind of stuff when I'm playing a game like this. So there's just, it sounds stupid, the whole nail and hammer thing, but it's so clever. And like I said, the different ways you use it in such a compact section is... It's so nice to see, and you can tell that there's a really gifted group of people working on this. The budget's clearly higher. There's a lot of talent, and it's condensed. There's no filler. You literally play it, and just when you think you might be seeing all of it, you have, and you move on to the next exciting thing, which is a brand new direction. It's really solid.
The Let's Play that's up on the site, it's kind of hard to watch the whole thing without... being a person, like, I haven't played it, so I was watching it and I was kind of like, oh damn, this looks really good. Like, this looks like a lot of fun. And I feel like with A Way Out, I think from when that game was released, the ambition was kind of there with the idea surrounding it and the creative side that he was kind of delivering. And I think everyone was like, oh, that seems pretty cool, we'll definitely try that out. This seems like it's just topped so much more than A Way Out regarding, like, just there's just so much. It's a game that's so much more creative, it seems. Like, there was one moment in the Let's Play early on, I think it's yourself, Ed, and you got Chris to come along over to a plug socket.
I did the exact same thing, by the way, to Chris Hyde.
Yeah, and it was like just sticking a nail or something like that into the socket,
it's a
and
nail.
You get electrocuted and you die. And you said it exactly in the video. You were like, what's that for? Like, there seems to be no reason for it. But that's the kind of joy of a game like that right now.
Yep.
Where you're kind of like, here's a giant toolbox, it's a story, but there's a giant toolbox of fun to just kind of dive into, and you can totally miss that. And if you, a lot of it's the replay value, because I'm sure you said as well, there's no collectibles in this game.
So what you just said is kind of how Joseph Farrar has described it, in that he said there are, his phrase, and it's in the trailer, no shiny shit. Like, there is no collectibles. What they wanted to do instead, and based on the 2 hours, I certainly think they've achieved it, is they want you to make the world interesting. So the thing, like, with the fork and the torture chamber, for example, and there's other things. Why are they there? Why is this here? Because it makes the world feel more like a world instead of a video game level that you go through. And there's one of the comments here from Steve Chambers. It says, sounds Nintendo like in the ideas aspect. Now, I know Chris White, in your interview, you heard this, and in the presentation I got, Joseph Farrar was very specific to say that he loves Nintendo, and I do think this is the most sort of Nintendo game I've played that isn't a Nintendo game. One question we've got from Steve is, do you expect this to do well due to the shortage of new titles at the moment? Chris Hyde, what do you think? Do you think this will do well due to the shortage of new titles at the moment?
I think it absolutely deserves to do well. I think if it's not coming across from what we're saying, people absolutely need to get all over this when this game comes out. From what we've played, this is one of the best platformers I've played in a long time, and the fact that you get to enjoy it with a friend, you should absolutely do it. I'm going to badger someone to play this with me. I don't care how I have to do it. I'm going to be playing this game to the end. So therefore, I hope it does. It's always difficult to say it definitely will, because it is sort of one of those sort of, like, it's not indie, but it's not AAA, AA, what you want to call it. It's like a middling, I would guess, with kind of Haze Light. But I think it. I really hope it does, because it really deserves to, because it shows there's a certain level of, you know, I guess, technique in the development. There's a lot of skill there, but there's clearly a lot of passion, a lot of love, and a lot of thought that's gone into this. on so many different levels, and it really hits the mark. Mm. So really, it would be pretty disappointing if no one plays it.
Mm. And I think a lot of people will be up for it. Like, it seems like it doesn't. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of quality to it. Like, even the voice acting alone seems super solid.
The friend pass thing gives me hope, because then more people will play it, because I guess you only one copy of two people, but whether that will undermine how many copies get sold and how many gets purchased, I don't know, is the only thing.
I get the feeling EA like having Hazelight around, because they make so far good games. This is the first one I liked A Way Out, it was fine, but I really think this is from the way it feels, and I think that's another interesting thing, is like the production value is something that really surprised me, because A Way Out was again, I thought fine, visually it was okay. I didn't think the voice acting was great, but I think that's because Joseph Fares did a lot of it himself. He does a lot of the motion capture in this one, but the voice actors are voice actors, and there's not besmirching him in any way, but I feel like the production values are higher in terms of the visuals, the audio.
Yeah.
Like, there's sound effects you won't have heard on the video. We've got a Let's Play Part 2 coming Tuesday, same time as the first one. But there's when you get sucked through the vacuums, the Hoover parts, like the sound in there that you hear when you're playing it is incredible. Like, I've never heard a sound like that in a video game.
For it to be the follow-up to like A Way Out, it almost feels like. Like, the idea of A Way Out, as I said, was really cool, and we said what we said there, but like it almost feels like It Takes Two should be like the third game down the line after A Way Out.
Well, it kind of is, because he made Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Oh yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
not at Hazelight, so it's his third game. And that's the other thing as well, is like, he's obviously, his background is movies. He made movies. A Way Out felt like he tried to take movie and turn it into a video game. This feels like a video game, just a video game, but a really good one.
The other things I'll say, just to, I know we've talked a lot about how good it is, but there's a couple of things that did surprise me. One, this game's really quite funny in parts. If you don't like that talking book, there's something wrong with you. I was laughing within seconds. Yeah, the little ding. I know Adam and Chris loved him, but it's also quite dark in places as well. There's Chris, I know which moment you're referring to. There's some moments here which I'm pretty certain will be talked about later in the year, or that we've seen, and I would be surprised if there's other ones. This is not just a cutesy platformer. You know,
no, but my worry is that it's also, as you say, it's funny and quite flippant and silly, and then it's not easy to thread the needle to get the pathos and the...
No,
the humor.
I think many comedy TV shows. Sorry, Chris. Yeah. Like many comedy TV shows, like as much as people slate Ricky Gervais, like The Office, managed to blend comedy and drama perfectly throughout that whole show. As with The American Office, but there's a lot of shows that managed to get that right, and I feel like it all felt right. It didn't jump from one to the next. You go. Why are they doing that?
No, I don't mean that. I just mean that we played 2 hours, you know, give or take. And he says it's 12 to 14 hours. And it looks as though there's kind of like a story scene that kind of bookends each level. And they showed stuff in the trailers that suggest there's definitely a lot more humour. I will genuinely be interested to hear that game, the story finishes sort of thing.
Can I quickly ask there, like I know you said we have a part two coming up soon, but are you worried with the length time of the overall game?
No.
Like,
no.
Is it?
No, not
has,
at all.
Do you feel it's not thrown out?
No, but this
too
is the thing again, and I know we've talked about this game a lot, but he specifically said that's why every section, every level of this game, which is the levels are sort of 40-ish minutes, maybe not even. Every level has different mechanics. You know, the first major level, you get the hammer and nails, and it's cooperative like that. The second level, you've got two different guns that interact with one another. Like, I just want to know what's the next idea, because so far, unless they have completely front-loaded this game with those ideas, I don't see how this isn't going to just be an excellent. No, I don't believe so either.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, it would be the biggest disappointment of the year if it went like that. Now, genuinely would be, because it's that good. We should move on. We should move on. Chris Hyde, what? I'm going to ask as if I don't know what you have been playing. What have you been playing that you want to talk about?
So I've got a problem. I've got a really big problem. I am addicted to Satisfactory, which is an early access game where basically it starts off. It starts off as a survival game. You kind of, I guess, land on this alien planet, and you've just got to gather some resources to survive, build a base camp, and you know, things start off quite slowly. Okay, get some, mine some resources here and there, and things progress. You know, oh, I've been here before. I've played these types of game before. I know where this is going. And then I realized how much of a geek I am that I can start creating conveyor belts and little factories that I can design from the ground up to automate my entire life in this game. And all of a sudden I fall down a rabbit hole of hours and hours on end creating little factories. So it's a game that it's a weird blend, I think. Satisfactory because it's obviously about automation and automating resources. But at the same time, as I'm sure you and Chris White, who's played a little bit of it as well, will attest to, it's also got this massive world where you can go and explore and find out loads of interesting things and unlock loads of things, go and research things. Or you could just be me sitting in the corner building a factory that automates some piece of metal.
So, Chris, I'm showing our viewers the factory that you made recently that made the platings. That's what they're seeing.
I'm just going to have to contextualize how bad this game...
Do you have that piece of paper?
So the one just to... I've just done recently.
Yeah, yeah. Just for an example. Yeah. This is what this game's reduced him to.
For example, can you see that? So I start making drawings of how to make the most perfect, like, factory, and I have to be honest because it will tell you how far down the rabbit hole I am. I may have stayed up till 2 a.m. designing the factory you can now see live on screen. And sent it to Adam. I made a PowerPoint slide of it and everything. I said, this is how it's all going to work. And it was all efficient. And I was up till 2 a.m. in the morning on PowerPoint just doing that so that the next time we played it, I could go and do it all and make it all work. And I am ashamed with myself a little bit.
You shouldn't
about
be.
That.
I was genuinely impressed.
Whenever I walk past it, I'm also proud. Yeah, it makes me happy when I see it. But I also know that I wasted that evening a little bit.
Chris, I have a question.
Go for it.
What makes this type of game stand out amongst the others of this genre? Because I feel we're getting quite a few of these.
Yeah, I think it depends what you like. So obviously this certainly in the start of it has a very sort of Astroneer vibe. Like, you know, you kind of...
I'm sold.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's first person Astroneer, like, right, but I've deeper.
Yeah, don't you think? But it you know, in Astroneer, I was the guy that was like, storage, let's put everything neat and tidy. Let's make everything how it should be.
You did a fine job of it.
And I was great at that. And Adam and Chris were the kind of people that go off exploring and blow shit up. That was the roles that we had, generally speaking. Satisfactory has some of that elements of go off and exploring and we probably haven't actually explored enough, but it doubles down very much on the other side of it, which is automating production of stuff. Whereas in Astroneer, it was like a couple of machines, right, that would do it all for you. It's much more involved and there's many more things that you need to create, you know, the trees to create stuff. You have to have loads of this and loads of this and loads of this all feeding into each other. So that's much more involved. And so therefore, to prevent you from being the person that's always clicking produce, 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 you need to create machines to do it for you so that you can go off and do the exploring. So I like that because it means I get to design lovely, neat and tidy factories. And that's why I've really got sucked into the rabbit hole of this, because it really doubles down on that element of it about creating automated systems that throw up the resources that you need to then move on to the next part of the game, because the way it works is you have milestones you need to achieve which unlock new things. So it will say you need 300 of this and 200 of this. So you could either get 300 of this by standing at a craft bench for 3 hours holding your left mouse.
I mean, that is an element of a clicker. That's like a clicker game, you know what I mean? There was a moment when I was just stood there holding a mouse button like that, where I actually had a sore finger from holding it. I was thinking, this is kind of a clicker. You're not clicking, you're holding, but the principle of that. But then. You can, like you say, it's weird because the automation takes that away. You can just go off and explore as long as you've got power. And it does that thing, and Astroneer did this, is that every time you think, we're kind of plateauing. This just feels like such a bigger game. And it just, like, we still haven't unlocked the final phase. And in fact, just to address one of the questions, is there any indication of a future console release? It's actually in early access and has been for a while. And the reason I wanted to play this game, and I think I suggested it, is because the publisher is Coffee Stain. And they are the people behind Deep Rock, not developer, but publisher, and Valheim, publisher, and Satisfactory, which they have made themselves. So these guys, for me, Valheim, Deep Rock, Satisfactory, have very quickly become a publisher I love. Like, they make, there's three games, all three of which were in early access. To me, they know how to do it. Like, it's very much, it feels like Astroneer in first person, but also it diverges slightly as well. Like, there is combat in this game. There are weapons, like, I don't want to spoil things in case people do pick up, but there are weapons and stuff that you initially think, oh, you start the game with like an electric sort of cattle prod, little mini one. And I don't think when you first get that, you realize where you're going to end up. You think this is the combat. The combat is this, just have to hit things. Later on, when you're just swinging around this massive rebar kind of weapon, pulling out a gun and shooting them, all of a sudden, like, I don't know, like, there's just something about this game. It certainly got its hooks into you, Chris. I mean...
Yeah, and let's be really clear. Let's not pretend that I'm dragging you to play it, kicking and screaming, like you're not as addicted as I am. You're just addicted to, I think, a different part of it, which is around the discovery and the exploration, whereas I'm just a kind of maths geek part of it. But it's really well put together. You know, I did write something for the site about it, which I wrote very early on. I hadn't actually put that many hours into it, scarily, compared to how much I put in now, and it's not very many days later. And the scale of how we were playing it then when I wrote those words versus what we've discovered now, and therefore what I hope we can then unlock. We know we haven't unlocked stuff that is coming because we can't afford it yet, and things that we know would change the game again. There's just so much to it. It's just incredibly addictive, well laid out. I will say is a little bit buggy, but they are quite open about that. It's in the multiplayer, it's early access.
So they actually say that multiplayer is the worst aspect of it, and we had issues with vehicles because the vehicles only allow you one. Well, the vehicle we unlocked only allows one person in, the driver, but you can kind of stand on it a bit, you know, like other games where you can stand on it and go along. But it actually glitches to the point there are times where you're not there. Like, Chris is on my screen, he's on the top of the vehicle and we've made the journey. On his screen, he's way back there and the game hasn't caught up. It's definitely buggy in terms of the multiplayer, but also I feel like if it weren't for the fact that we were playing together, I don't know if I'd have got as deep into it. You know,
no, there's definitely a benefit of, you know, many hands make light work of things like this, and I think some people would find it daunting to do on their own. Whereas you can divide and conquer and that with more people.
What's the risk of exploring in this game?
Like, well, if you die,
was tethers and stuff like.
No, if you die, you can be revived, but otherwise you leave all your stuff there. It's not punishing. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you've spent ages crafting a load of things you need to progress the kind of trees, the research, and then you die, it's really far away, you can go back and get them and die again. But like, if you've forgotten to put the really important item you've just crafted in a chest or something, it doesn't punish you. But what I would say is that it seems vast. Like, every time you unlock something via research or a tier or the space station tiers, you sort of, you look at it and you go, well, that kind of is just, this is a brand new game again. Like, I know what's coming up in the next tier that we're working towards, and that is going to change everything. And it's kind of like, well, almost everything we've built, just move somewhere and start again, because none of that's any importance anymore. It's still useful, but it is very much that. I wonder where the end game will be. I know that there's the Reddit for Satisfactory is people like who decide, right, I'm going to start and see how quickly I can build this. I want to make a factory for this, and that is a thing. And it's not like Astroneer where we were chasing the achievements. I don't think that's a thing because it's on Epic Games we're playing it. So it's it just scratches an itch. It's very relaxing. The combat is fairly, it's actually quite responsive. Like for a first person game, the combat's pretty decent. Mm. I just haven't really got any complaints about it aside the bugginess, but it's an early access game. So I don't know what, you know, I don't know where you're. Well, you know,
come join us and marvel in my factory splendor is what I would say. It was really funny though, because Chris White joined and we'd already built a load of stuff, and I was trying to explain to him, because he just walked in and was like, what there's like Spaghetti Junction here with so much stuff everywhere. I was trying to explain to him like what we'd done, and he patiently listened to me talking him through all the production systems and everything else, and then this is this, and then you do this, and then you can do this, and he's like, okay, can I just go off and explore for half an hour? I'm like, yes, Chris, you can go. Thank you. Thank you for paying attention. But yeah, just go off and have a look. Because that's what... But, yeah, and you can do that as well.
Yeah, that's valid. That's, like, I just did that. The last session we played, you can still... But that piece of paper you showed people, you were building that. And I realised that we didn't have quartz. We just don't have a quartz mine. So I went off and found it, and it was miles away. And I realised I'd been and gone to the point where I had a full inventory. I was like, well, I've put a beacon down. We now know where the quartz is, but it's a long, long way away, and you've got to think of a solution to do. You can convey a belt across the land if you want, but when it runs out of power, you've got to yomp all the way back there to repower the machines that make you quartz.
Oh, brutal.
But saying that, also you can build future armor style tunnels. You know, the where you jump in and make a street, you know, what they're called? You know, the transportation tunnels? We haven't done that.
Yeah,
we could build one of them instead, and just whoosh, you can also automate your trucks. So as long as they got fuel in them, they can go to a truck station, drive all the way to where you tell them, drive back to here, dump off the stuff they've collected from the ore, and just keep doing that. So there's so much automation in that respect. It's got us.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, Mick Fraser, how are you? Because you look stressed, and what have you been up to?
I'm always stressed.
Yeah.
I exist in a permanent state of stress.
Okay.
Which is why I play so many games. Otherwise, I'd kill people, I think. speaking of which, games.
Yes.
I've been playing a few things, as usual. Yeah. I'm never just playing one or two games at any given moment. What do I want to talk about first?
Whatever you want, mate.
Yeah, because this in looks a preview good, sense,
right? Oh, yeah, I think, yeah, actually, I do think you'll like this one.
Yeah.
I don't know, I do no research ever, right? So I know bits and little pieces about it. Till I come to sit and review it, I haven't done any actual research. But basically, it's a side-scrolling Metroidvania. I think it's a Kickstarter. I've got a feeling that it's a Kickstarter that's, you know, been greenlit, and it's just it's the most 80s side scrolling platformer ever. And I know a lot of there's like a trend, isn't there, which is probably going to hit a brick wall eventually, where there's nobody left to play these games that remembers the 80s, and then these people are going to just struggle, I think. What's retro? There's nothing cool that's retro now, is there? In 30 years, going to be making games about us all sitting in our homes fucking dreaming of going to the chip shop again. But it's like, anyway, Narita Boy is like a side scroller Metroidvania, which there's hundreds of. I've been playing it on PC, and it's one of those games that I kind of wish I had on Switch already. Yeah, so like, it's that sort of game.
To be fair, it's not out till like the end of the month, is it? So I mean,
30th of March.
Yeah. We should just clearly say this is just a preview sense, okay?
Oh, this is a preview. Yeah, I'm not even anywhere near.
No, I know. Just in case anyone's watching, it's a preview.
It is. We are preview. I'm not going to give too much away, but it's really cool. It's like, but it knows it's cool. You know, some games just kind of, you get the feeling that they know already that people are going to lap it up. It's that kind of game. It's just in jokes. It's just 80s humor. One of the bosses in it is called Lord VHS, and he's like the boss of this dimension called.
It's subtle then. It's not.
Yeah, it's like the dimension he's the boss of is like Beta Maximus Prime or something. It's cool. But it's called Narita Boy, and I spoke to Adam when I first started playing it, and I said I couldn't work out what. I couldn't work out where to go for a start. It doesn't have a map. You know, like how Carrion, I think it was Carrion, was the site, was like the Metroidvania type thing without a map.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's one of the most frustrating things in the world to try and play one of these games with no map. And I honestly thought I'd hit a bug where the game wasn't opening up for me. And it wasn't. I just had to backtrack all the way to the beginning because I just got a new power and I should have thought about it, really. But it's basically about this guy who's a... I think your character is like a game nerd, which is fitting. And he gets taken into this video game. And the whole purpose of it is that he's like the chosen one. And he is to find an artifact called the Techno Sword, which they really should have called the game Techno Sword. Because the Techno Sword is like the crux of Narita Boy. So once you've got the Techno Sword, that's how you fight with it. It doubles up as, or triples up as, a shotgun and like a focused energy weapon. And then you start to unlock all these power-ups, like the standard stuff, like I can climb walls now and double jump and things like that. So it's very much, very, very Metroidvania. But it's quite... Sorry. Stop.
It's all right. He's Mick's easily distracted by shiny things.
I've got too many children to talk to me inside here. Anyway, yes, Narita Boy. It's good.
It's good. Talk to us about
Metroid.
I want to let Mick talk about the game he really wants to talk about. But if you've got questions, Chris, by all means.
I was just gonna. Obviously, you've only played a couple of hours of it, but it just sounds very much like.
I say a couple of hours. I've played quite a bit.
Yeah, but it sounds. Is there something that's like, not unique, but a little bit quirky and different, other than the kind of 80s setting, or is it just Metroidvania and it's 80s and that's from what you've seen?
Yeah. Okay. So not really, right? I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't reinvent the wheel or anything. You know, it is in terms of it, of the mechanics of what it is, it's pretty much a bog standard side-scrolling Metroidvania. Like, you know, the enemies pop up, you fight them, you know, you've got a variety of weapons and things like that. It really is, a lot of it really hangs on this world they've created, because I mean, you'll see it when sort of we put a video out for it. It's absolutely gorgeous. Like, it's ridiculously good looking. It's a pixel art game. I mean, it's 80s. It's all orange and purple, neon, and pink and neon. Yeah. And, you know, it's, and they've, everything about it, like the sound effects, to, it's beautiful, and it plays so well. But
that, and that's the thing, Mick. Like, I think that's what's extremely important with a game like this, is how it feels. It takes, because you know, you started, as you said, like, and it's kind of like, oh, it's not reinventing the wheel. That's fine.
That is fine. Yeah.
Once that gameplay is tight, and eventually you kind of go, I got to flow it down here, like Mark of the Ninja, or even for me, Blasphemous and things like that. You know, once you get that thing down, it's like, oh, this is really satisfying. And then if it just has a beautiful aesthetic, which it clearly does, I'm sold immediately. You know,
it does something which is a bit weird in these. Like, you know how normally when you pick up a Metroidvania, it kind of just throws you into it. Like, even things like Ori or stuff. Like, you get a little bit of intro, and then kind of you're just in the game, and then it's on. It's like, right, you'll probably hit your first wall you can't go through pretty quick and realize that you need to. So Narita Boy, or I don't even know how you pronounce it, Narita. It takes a long time to get going. Like, I was playing for a good half an hour, and that doesn't sound like a lot, but it is when you're in a game like this. I was playing for a good half an hour before I got hold of the Techno Sword, for example. I was playing, and so it takes a long time to get going. And the writer, I'm not sure how many people are behind the game, but they really like their 80s techno jargon. Right, so it's like all the dialogue is text-based, and there's tons of it, it got to a point where I was about 15 or 20 minutes, I was like, are you going to get going at any point? Are we going to get something really interesting happen? Because I was just reading reams of dialogue of people talking about, you know, you got to go and get the floppy disk of Amun-Ra and take it to the, and it really goes on and on about all these things you've got to do, and then ultimately, once you start playing, you realise that they kind of overcomplicated it, because once that section is over and you get hold of the Techno Sword and you're off, it's just fucking excellent. It's like really good. And you don't really need all that stuff. because you can, you know, you can check your objectives when you want, so you know what you're roughly supposed to be doing. And the rest of it is all just kind of flavor text, and there's too much of it.
Right.
Certainly more than it needs, especially in that opening half an hour. But once you get going, once you get hold of the sword, it's just, it's superb. The animation's brilliant as well. I mean, it's a pixel art game, but it looks gorgeous in motion.
In a preview sense, yes.
Talk
to us about the game that you really want to talk about. Like, I know there's not that there's anything wrong with that one, but just go on, off you go. Talk to us about it. Outriders.
I'm assuming you mean Outriders. Yeah. This go is on, just like, I feel kind of like People Can Fly just made this game for me, and then I it's almost like could have turned up at the door with it for me and said, "This is for you." We don't care what anyone else thinks. it's such a me game. It's really good. I don't know what to talk about, really, because obviously the demo's out. The demo's live. Anybody can download it and jump into it. And I think the demo's also going on. In fact, there's an update coming for the demo. So they're actually updating the demo. Yeah, there's an update coming for the demo because someone's found a way to farm legendary weapons, and People Can Fly are saying, we don't want you breaking it too soon. So they're issuing an update, which is funny because I saw someone on Twitter had put, you know, People Can Fly doing more for their game during the demo than they've done for Avengers since it launched, which I thought was quite...
I gotta say, I don't know much about the game as such, but like looking at the footage, I'm gonna bang a Gears of War off this.
Well, they made a Gears of War game, didn't they? They made Judgment.
They made Judgment.
So there's definitely... I get more Mass Effect Division vibes. I feel like I want to get this chat out of the way now so that when we review it and it comes out, we can maybe not to talk about it. They've gone out of their way to say this is not a service game. They've gone out of their way to say, like, this is not like a Division. This is not a Destiny. But it is, isn't it, Mick? It is.
It really feels like one. Like, they've pretty much confirmed, I believe, that there's no microtransactions coming, which is probably the biggest. That's probably going to be the biggest differential between this game and something like those.
And I know it's like a don't read the comments situation, but one of the comments on your excellent video on the YouTube channel was, if this isn't a service game, why do I have to log in?
Why is it online?
When the demo went, we got early access to the demo. Square Enix sent codes over, like they did with the Balan Wonderworld thing, which went a little bit differently for them, it seems. But with this, the second it went live publicly, you couldn't log in for the night. Like, it took a few hours. Now, that is a service game, because you, very definition of it, you have to connect to a service. If you're trying to play online, cool, that's fine. But if you just want to play single player, like, what you're saying there is, if they take the servers down, you can't play your game single player, which is a service game.
The only real reason I can think of why they would do this, because it's a little bit, I assumed it was a service game all the way up until just a few weeks before the demo went live. And then when I heard that it wasn't, I assumed it was going to be more like something like Monster Hunter, maybe, where you can just play solo, offline, and if you want to go online, that's when you go to a place where other players are. But it's not like that. Like you said, it's always online. The only thing I can possibly think of is it's to do with the fact that they intend to keep a persistent end game. They want to keep on top of the loot and things like that, and they possibly will be tracking stats and numbers behind the scenes and all those things.
Maybe.
I mean, and the other thing as well, I mean, I don't want to jump to any conclusions because the game's not even out yet, but if this kind of game does well, I mean, you see like Diablo's not a service game, but every couple of months there's a new season where you get new gear and new challenges and new... I can see them doing that with Outriders. So I can see them not ever actually going, it is a service game, but I can see at some point there being possibly seasons down the line, I don't know, public events, seasonal events and things like that. I think that probably is very much on the table for the game. They've probably even got things like that in on their minds.
But man, the impression I get, because I like this game, by the way, I should say, I'm not here to be like devil's advocate, what about this, what about that? I actually quite enjoyed it. It's a demo in as much as that you can actually, if you buy the game, you can carry on your progress when it comes out. It is, it's not really a demo as much as it is a taster. But it feels to me as though they are just, they saw what happened with Avengers and they're like, we don't want none of that. And yeah, it is maybe. Square Enix published both. And it's clear that to me that Square Enix are trying to get in on the Division, the Destiny, that... Because who wouldn't want a piece of that pie? Because whatever you think of the Division 2 or Destiny or any of those games, they have fans. Destiny keeps going. They keep reinventing it. People
Everyone
keep
wants
back.
A game that can yes. just... Yeah. last for like ages and ages,
and it's day one. It's the modern version of I only play FIFA and Call of Duty. It's that. Yeah. I just feel it's like it just feels weird to me that they're saying so much of what this game isn't, and I guess maybe you're letting the demo talk for what it is. But the other thing I would say is that it starts like a Mass Effect. Like, it's very story heavy. There's cutscenes. There's the thing that makes this game stand out in its genre are the powers. You choose to be a pyromancer, and you can use flame attacks or all the classes that you can choose. But you don't get to them for like 50 minutes to an hour, and that's when it becomes you get your power. You're still playing through the intro, and you get to the sort of. You get to the hub, because that's what it is. It's a hub. You get to the hub, and then it becomes, right. And so you want to do this quest. Here's this quest, go on the map. Oh, by the way, you can replay that quest. It's like, well, hang on a minute. So is this a story game or not? Because you're now saying I can just replay that quest for better loot. And I get it. But that, again, these are tropes of a service game.
And it's very, very difficult to balance that, though. Like, it must
I'm saying make a Mass Effect.
Hard.
If you want to make a third-person action RPG like Mass Effect, they start that. That is, there's dialogue choices. There's conversation options.
See, what they've wanted, to, again, the dialogue choices, I think, are mostly cosmetic. I don't think
they are, yeah.
So they're going to affect anything. Yeah. But I think, obviously, what like you said, they could quite easily have just developed this as a single-player game. They didn't need probably
But that's how I felt about Avengers. Like, that single player is good, and it was like, and it's Crystal Dynamics. They made those Tomb Raider games. To me, somewhat, it almost feels like, and I don't know this, and I have no knowledge of the insiders of this, it feels like someone at Square Enix is going, make it a service game. But shh, shh. Because if Avengers came out, right, without any multiplayer, apart from just co-op, just to let you do that, if they didn't bother with all the, like, well, I say endgame stuff, there isn't really much in Avengers like that. But, if they just made those story, like, if Avengers was like an Uncharted, if this was like a Mass Effect, I feel like they'd be getting a lot more plaudits. I feel like they'd get better critical reception. I think fans would say, oh, cool, Square are making more games like that. Instead, what you get is Avengers is compared to The Division. This is compared to The Division. Because they're going into that genre, whereas, like, Crystal Dynamics are surely a developer that make... Like, that Tomb Raider reboot was immense. The Avengers single player is good.
I don't know if that's... I don't know if that's what it feels like to me. Like, because, I mean, they've sort of already said that the story, the campaign in Outriders is something like 35, 40 hours of a campaign. And you can do it all alone. Like, things like... But fair enough, when Destiny launched, you could do that campaign alone if you wanted to. And in fact, the campaign wasn't bad, but it was 10 or 12 hours worth.
Right.
The Division campaign, if you hit the Division and Division 2 campaign and just played them as a campaign shooter, it was over in 10 or 12 hours. Whereas this to me feels more like the way, like as you play Outriders, there's two ways you gain levels. So I don't know how much you've played, but there's two ways you gain levels. So you gain your experience levels, which is pretty standard, unlock new powers, new skills. But then you've got that world tier.
That's interesting, that bit, I will say. That is an interesting element.
Now, so what happens with the world tier is the more you do in the game, the more experience you earn. I don't know how many things factor into the world tier, but I know that as I'm going through killing named enemies, completing things, getting loot, that world tier keeps building. When the world tier clicks... everything goes up a difficulty level. You get better loot, you get harder bosses, you get everything just ramps up, almost like Diablo's adventure levels. Now, as soon as it ramps up a world tier, you get a free thing from the game. It gives you a new weapon, or it gives you some money to spend, yes, or it gives you a boost of something. But then if you want to, you can just drop back into the previous world tier. What you won't do then is gain experience towards the next world tier, but you can then, you can choose your difficulty a little bit. So I feel like what they've, I feel like maybe what they wanted to do in the first place was develop a shooter that, like you said, was probably the development team, whoever came up with all these ideas in the first place, probably just wanted to make a campaign shooter. They probably just wanted to, yeah, make something like Bulletstorm was, or like the Gears games are, where it's a campaign shooter and we'll add multiplayer later. But I think in looking at games like The Division 2, in looking at games like Destiny 2, there's a lot of people now. Like, if you want to play a multiplayer game of PvP, most people are going to go to Call of Duty or Battlefield or the Fortnites and Apex Legends now. There's so many games. Whereas I think they've obviously gone, well, we want to do the player versus enemy thing. We want people to play cooperatively. But that kind of that immediately puts it in the same pen as Destiny 2 and The Division 2, because I think they're the only games that really do that. They're like, they're not the only games to do that, but that is that subset, that subgenre that does that. So I think in doing that, and then kind of like, I mean, I've played a little bit of multiplayer with some random people without a mic. I wasn't talking to them. So I don't know what it's like when you play with friends and you properly synergize, but it doesn't feel tacked on, let's put it that way. It doesn't feel like they've just gone, let's put a multiplayer element on the side of it, because the powers work really well together. Like, someone has really put some thought into how the powers will synergize into...
The boss battles make that work as well. Like, the boss battle was genuinely interesting, genuinely challenging as well.
Yeah, and how the healing mechanics work, because every class heals differently. So, like, I play the Trickster primarily because of this, you know, then the Trickster can slow down time and teleport and all these really cool things. But you can only, like, you're kind of the squishiest character or the squishiest class. You can die really quickly, but you can only heal from close range kills. So you've got to get in the enemy's face. But then when you heal, you also, you know, pick up a little overshield, which keeps you alive to get back out of the danger again. Whereas, like, you've got some, I can't remember which character it is, I think it's the Technomancer that heals from kills with their powers, and one of them heals from kills at a distance. I think the Devastator heals from, like, physical, or I can't remember exactly. But all the classes heal in different ways. They all, all their powers work in different ways. But when you throw it all together, it really works really well. And I kind of get the feeling that it doesn't feel like they just went, it doesn't feel cynical, right? And a lot of stuff like feels cynical, like the Avengers game. And I like the Avengers game. I'm not going to disparage it and, you know, go back on the score I gave it, because I really enjoyed the campaign. I didn't enjoy the multiplayer aspect so much. And the end game, such as it is, tailed off real quick for me. But the actual campaign I enjoyed, but the multiplayer side of that, for a game that is based on a crew of superheroes doing their thing, it felt really tacked on and messy. Like, there was no synergy, there was no connection between the characters. Yeah. Whereas I think Outriders nails that a lot better. I feel like people can fly as well.
You've got to say, you convinced Deadbeat Punk, who said, you've convinced me the demo's installing now in the live chat. So there you go.
But, like, I mean, just one additional before we move on. I remember you saying to me when we first started playing, you brought it up, that, and I agree, I was expecting a little bit more, I want to say, zaniness. You know, that, like, silly. Did you play Bulletstorm? I know you did, Adam. I'm guessing probably a couple of you guys have played Bulletstorm. Bulletstorm was fucking brilliant. Like, whether the story was silly or whatever, or it was very, you know, derivative of other things, that skill kill system was just excellent. Like, all the ways you could find to do the trick shot kills in that game made that game. It was just spectacular, some of it. And they had a whole challenge mode, single player, I might add, challenge mode dedicated to just earning as many points as you could from as many of those trick skills. And then I thought we were going to get some of that in Outriders. I thought that I kind of expected there to be just a little bit more off the wall, because the story is really quite po-faced. Like, for as fact, they could have gone really tongue in cheek. They could have really ramped up the cheesiness deliberately. And the story's really a little bit serious. And I don't know. I was expecting them to go a little bit more. I mean, Bulletstorm, the main character's a pisshead, and that just keeps, you know, he's famous for regularly fucking stuff up, and it's, I don't know, it was just more fun. But yeah, I really like Outriders. Really impressed with the demo, to be honest. It's got the usual jank, but I do enjoy it.
I'd say I liked it too. I'd be interested to see how it carries on, or if like the rhythm is now set. Does anybody else have any games they want to talk about, or should we move into listener correspondence? Chaps, how do you feel? Yeah, it's up to you guys.
I am up for listener correspondence.
Okay. Right. Well, Adam's made the decision, so Chris and Chris.
And that's final.
So my silence was agreement with Adam's point. Let's do some correspondence.
Silence not great on a podcast, but it's fine.
Sorry. Right. Sorry. I am all in for correspondence.
Good
Let's
man.
Do this.
Good man. And Chris White, what about you? All in?
I imitated the Crash Test Dummies. And I did go, but it was obviously not audible.
Crash Test
Dummies.
And I felt
I wasn't as kind of loud as I should have been. So let's do some listener correspondence, baby.
That song's going to be an earworm now until I listen to it.
Oh, no, don't bother. Listen, listen to the correspondence. Kira says, if you were in an RPG, an example like Yakuza, Like a Dragon, what would your preferred job be in the party, Adam Carroll? Yes. She didn't specifically ask you, but I am.
Job, like, I'd just like to be the tank person in the back, like, that, and job. Like,
oh, you've taken it as like a job. I know, because in Yakuza Like a Dragon, you know, the job system, like where he becomes, I mean, one of them's a musician, Adam. I didn't want to tell you in case you'd steal that, because I won that one.
I assume it doesn't mean... Well, I don't know. I took it more like generic jobs in like Final Fantasy games. But then I guess there's also the very unique jobs in...
So let's go traditional like then. Like, you know, so mage, healer, that... Okay, so you're tank, right, Adam. Look,
I'd be a tank and I'd be a musician. A musician tank.
Excellent.
So why would you...
Swinging guitars left and right.
Why would you be a tank?
Because I just like to be in the back. And I just like to be like
tanks are in the front.
Stuff out.
I'd
be in the back.
He's a thinking man's tank.
I'd be thinking, and then I charge in. That's my plan.
Useless tank. We're gonna.
I'm a useless tank. I'm one of the crappiest tanks out there.
He's got the most hit points, and he's built like a brick shit house. Let's stick him behind everybody else. That's great.
Let the dragon get knackered eating you, lot, and then I'll be in with my fucking piano.
We've established then that Adam is a tank. For some reason, with the generals.
This is a party that's doomed from the start. Can I just say?
So we got our tank. Can I just say I'd be the healer, or would someone else want to take that off?
I
know we have a lot of similarities, Chris.
To be fair, we probably need two healers if Adam.
Well, if Adam's tanking at the back, he's basic. Yeah. So what you're saying is that Adam,
Adam, front tank and a back tank, and the rest of us can just sit in the middle.
So Adam's basically saying he's like Leroy Jenkins, isn't he? But at the back.
Watch that video as well.
So all right, we've got a tank. What other roles have we got? Is anyone going to say they're going to be a mage?
I don't mind being a mage. Normally I'd go healer because I like helping people. I'm a nice guy. But I don't mind being a mage if you want to be the healer and just like chuck in fire and crap at everything.
Sounds to me like you're trying to you're asking who's the nicer guy. That's what this feels like right now. If you want to be the healer.
I think that's clear that's me. That's me, but I'm being nice. And
yeah, because the nice guy's always the one that's
guy.
Like, I'm the nicest guy. You've fallen in your own trap there, mate.
It's just one of those things that just
I think as the
saying.
As the nerdiest, poshest one, the mage is the obvious choice for you, eh?
I'll be mage, Adam's healer, and we'll presumably also be at the back. At the moment, we haven't got a front row. So I'm hoping
hang on. So we got the tank at the back, Chris and I as the two mages, basically healer and damage dealer. What would Chris White and Mick?
Well, I'm sure Mick would be similar, but I'm always kind of like in Diablo, I'm always like me and my mate always play, and he's always the mage and using like magic from the back, and I'm always like the kind of barbarian figure that's back, going back in there with a...
magic from the back.
So I'd be a barbarian.
I'm magic from the back. I'm usually like magic from the back.
I am always, surprisingly, because I'm not a little fella, but I am always the rogue ranger. Always
like the elf
DPS
like...
for days. That's my role. Tats. Always DPS for days. Right, the rogue, the ranger.
So you're at the back as well. So
I tend to I tend to get.
It's a whole new JRPG.
It's fine, guys.
I mean, we've invented something completely different here, where the entire back row is basically just shouting encouragement to the healer who's in.
What?
He's getting stuck in.
When did this get decided that I'm now at the front?
Well, it's, if we're all,
well, we're all at the front by default.
We're just constantly
walking away from the fight. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Just move the healer front and centre. You carry on.
This is the worst JRPG play I've ever seen.
Moving on.
I'm telling you, this is going to be an amazing game.
It's not. It's not. Moving on. Next question is from G-Town Big Potatoes, who says, back in the mists of time when going outside to do stuff was still a thing, I used to like visiting the arcades at the seaside. Have you gone back in time? Literally. What are your earliest arcade memories, and which cabinets will always hold a special place in your heart? G-Town Big Potatoes says, I'll always remember playing Paperboy and Rampage as a youth after scrounging a few pound coins from my folks. Keep well, my dudes, and for Christ's sake, respect the sea. Anyone got any early arcade memories?
Time Crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Time Crisis. The shooting games.
Time House Crisis or House of the Dead, yeah.
Always
yeah.
in House of the Dead. The Terminator one. The Terminator, yeah. The Terminator 2.
Yeah.
It used to play the music riff straight away when you put the money in.
There's a really
in,
shit was... version of that called Time based on Terminator Salvation in Skegness. It was never as good as Terminator 2. But yeah, I was always Time Crisis when I was a kid.
We were just on the gun straight away. I was never very good at like things like Street Fighter and stuff. I'm terrible at fighting games, so I just ignore those.
I've got three I can give you. Two quickies and a story for the ages. So one was... When
my wedding night.
Funnily enough, one of the games I used to play, Mick, was called Operation Wolf. So that's also like your wedding night. No, so when I was a young lad, my dad, we'd never been particularly well off, and so my dad, for his job,
I've got a violin somewhere.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Start playing. My dad, instead of getting like bonuses or extra money, his boss used to. Sort of, he obviously had a deal somewhere where he paid for a holiday for us. So we used to go to Spain quite a lot. We used to go to the same, very similar place every time. It wasn't like it was his villa or anything. It was a
fuck the violin. We used to go to Spain all the time.
No, I know, and I was very lucky too. And it was basically my dad's bonus every year was his boss paid for him. And in this, and you know how you used to go, you go in like one of the local cafes or whatever, and there's like we'd always have like the equivalent of a bender and a bun. From Wimpy, which was like the Frankfurter all split open and fried nicely, and they in the corner had a dirty Operation Wolf machine.
There's going to be some young people that have no idea what you're talking
about.
No,
I probably offended 100 people just by saying that, but I don't mean to. That was what it was called, and still is, I believe. I don't know. Wimpy still exists. Anyway, they had an Operation Wolf cabinet, which has had the Uzi that you had. It was crap. Mm. And the other one is then later in life. Our local swimming pool had upstairs a slush puppy machine and a Mortal Kombat machine. And so we didn't go swimming.
Just played the slush puppy machine all day long.
We just went and got a slush puppy. But the thing is, back then, they didn't let you in. They didn't let you in unless you were using the facilities. So we had to kind of pretend we'd been swimming and when we hadn't. So we genuinely used to turn up in like swimming costumes under and stuff to pretend we'd been swimming just to go and play Mortal Kombat. The other one is...
Perfectly dry.
Yeah, we weren't smart. The other one for me is that I live, and I have lived for a very long time on the South Coast, and there's a place off the South Coast called the Isle of Wight, or Isle of Widget, as a lot of people like to call it. And in the Isle of Wight, there is a place called Black Gang Chine, okay? We went there on a school trip, and I got banned from the arcade because this poor young scamp me, I found, once upon a time, 20 pence. You push the button and it used to reject the coins out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went around this arcade that was pretty quiet because it was during the day on a school trip, pressing every single button, trying to get money out, and the bloke banned me for life. I've never been
That's
back.
That's harsh.
It's what? Very harsh.
That's kind of harsh.
Jesus.
It doesn't feel like the punishment is in keeping with the crime.
I've never been back to Black Gang Chime.
Go back and see if he recognises you.
I wouldn't think so.
Oi,
I mean,
I banned you.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. That's the thing. It wasn't that he banned me. He was very specific. You're banned for life. Get out. And I think I found 20p. It was
for
the 120p.
You should totally go back.
It's also going to be quite sad if the same guy's there like 20
years
on.
Oh, he must be surely dead by now. He was pretty old then. I'd imagine he's long gone.
He lost.
Yeah. Anyone else? Arcade memories. Yeah, he lost the game of life. Or did he? I'm not really sure now.
Wow.
Right now, I'm not so sure.
That's harsh. Yeah.
I meant in that he's probably not still alive. I didn't.
It's still
that's
a harsh
not worse.
Way of
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't.
My mum and dad used to run the social club at the hospital, right? In town, not the hospital. There's a little social club there. My mum and dad worked the bar there. And they used to have an arcade machine with a game on it called Knights of the Round. Do anyone remember that game? And I don't think it ever made it to console. It was basically like a Streets of Rage, but with Knights of the Round Table. So it's like Galahad and Lancelot and Percival, and it was a bit like Golden Axe. And I must have played it every day, more or less, for months during the summer holidays. And it's one of those that I've always wanted a remake. I've always wanted them to do something with it, and no one else remembers it. Half convinced I dreamed it, to be honest. Especially if you
know.
Guys haven't heard
no,
of it.
Sorry,
we,
mate.
We must know everything about games between the five of us.
any other arcade memories?
I mean, Time Crisis and House of the Dead were the two that jumped up to me. I was also quite, belying my ample frame now, was quite the goer on Dance Stage Euro Mix back in the day.
I was terrible at those games.
I used to bust some serious shapes on that.
I would pay to see that now.
Earlier than that was Street Fighter, was it Championship Edition or that, the equivalent one that was on the arcades. The one with Ryu doing his thing and then he does the talking at the front anyway. And then also all the racers in the cars with the seats, and then I don't know the name of it, but there was one that was like all covered all the way over the top, and it was like this Jeep, and you'd go on safari, and the whole flipping thing moved up and down when you were going up hills. So no idea what it was called, but all those like proper encased ones were quality back in the day. Graphics were shot to shit, but just the feeling of like going over.
I mean, we used to have a Sega World in Bournemouth near us, and I will forever mourn the loss of that place. They were amazing places.
That's good. Yeah.
Any other arcade memories, or should we move to
I just had yeah? all I had really was, along with Time Crisis, Point Blank.
That's a game. I forgot about that. That's great.
That one. And then just Donkey Kong. I've had a lot of time with Donkey Kong on an arcade machine, and that was just brilliant. But Point Blank's a good old game, all right.
Point Blank 2, great.
It was wild. Yeah. It was so crazy stuff you could do. Well, not what you do, but just the ideas were fun. Yeah. Like, you know,
God, I don't remember that. What was Point Blank?
It was a Namco game again.
Yeah,
another similar idea with the gun and stuff. But
but it was like crazy Japanese, wasn't it?
Like, mad old mini games,
flying ducks and stuff, and points for doing it really well.
Kind of like a WarioWare shooter in ways. But it was a lot of fun. But like, I don't know, man, I'd love to go to an arcade again. I think the last arcade I ever went to was like the one in Brighton. Whenever I used to go to Brighton a lot, and there was like a one down by the sea there, and I used to just love going in. Just so much fun. But yeah, Donkey Kong was my favourite.
Any more? Or should we?
Turtles in Time. Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, no.
Forgot about
that. Arcades, was it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, good call.
That's the big one, isn't it?
That was
on the NES.
Turtles in Time is like one of the most loved Turtles games. But I think, if I'm right, I think that's just been released again in like the arcade box unit that you can buy now.
There are companies that do that. I've always wanted to.
Yeah.
I feel like, especially this setup I've got here, I would love to have. But the thing is, a lot of them, they're not full sized because, of course, they'd cost a fortune. They're sort of three quarter size, and you can get risers to put them on. But it's I don't know.
I got this for Christmas, and I've not put batteries in it actually. So while we're talking about arcades,
it was a good old present then, Mick.
Because it's on the shelf.
And he's just broadcast. It was an old present, and he hates it.
It's not that. I put it on the shelf and it looks really nice on my shelf, but that's got 200 classic arcade games.
Yeah,
in it
so this yeah. That's the thing that nowadays arcades are that. Like you can build them a lot cheaper. It's like the old arcades are expensive and dangerous to actually, like, if the wires go or anything like that, are dangerous to muck around with. That put me off ever getting an original one if God forbid I could afford it and had the inclination to spend on it. But these, like, Arcade 1-Up, and there's another company, I can't think of the name of them, they're kind of cool. That they've got all the artwork on the sides and they look cool. They're just not full-sized. And the truth is, it is not something you're going to go and play. Like, if it was over in this corner, I'd go and have a go on Street Fighter, and then I'd go, it's done that then, isn't it? I could have just done that. Anyway, McPoo says, as I'm sure we can all agree, Breath of the Wild is one of the best games of all time. But what would you like to see in the sequel? Personally, I'm happy with the same format as the game. But the only thing I wished it had was the equipment from older Zelda games. Throw a hookshot or Pegasus boots into the sequel and I'm happy. Thoughts?
Can I say one thing I wish it didn't have?
Weapon fucking break on you every 20 minutes.
You can, Chris. That isn't the question, but by all means.
Mick said.
Oh,
I'm playing it again now. I talked about losing the save file a couple of weeks ago on the pod. I've now found it. I'm now playing it again when I can. But that still winds me up. And I don't think I can ever get over the fact, unless something changes and that doesn't happen, more like that just continually does my head in. And I don't think it is. It's not for me one of the best games of all time. But I understand why. Like the Beatles. Okay. Beatles are rubbish.
Okay. Back to the question.
I agree with Chris, actually, on both counts. But yeah,
I don't disagree about the weapon stuff, but that's not the question. But in terms of stuff, I agree, actually, in terms of I want more equipment and stuff in the Breath of the Wild sequel. I think I agree. Hookshot, definitely. I'd love that. I think there's been some really interesting stuff in 3D Zelda's done with the hookshot, either through Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess with the double one, I think was really good. So be really interested to see how they can take that to the next level. And also really interesting, given that in Breath of the Wild you can climb a lot of stuff anyway, what makes the hookshot unique would be really interesting to see. The Pegasus boots, when he mentions, is interesting because I think there always needs to be a way to move quicker. I think the Pegasus boots in Link to the Past were good because there wasn't a horse. Whereas when you've got shield sliding and a horse in Breath of the Wild, you probably don't need Pegasus boots as well. I think you just need some way of moving around relatively quick, and I think you've probably got that. The one thing I'd probably add to the list, and it's a personal thing, is I'd like Link to have a few more like spells or items that do interesting things like damage, like area effect damage or whatever. So like the medallions in Link to the Past or Din's Fire in Ocarina of Time, just stuff like that. I'd quite like if he just had a few more of those up his sleeve to do different things rather than just kind of sword damage. So that would be my answer.
I think personally, like with the sequel, one of the biggest things I'm interested in seeing them, whether they change it up or what, is either if they're going to go ahead with shrines, or are they going to bring back some sort of dungeon situation? Because I feel it seems like 2 is going to be that little bit darker, like a Majora's Mask job again. But like dungeons would suit, I feel, the tone, because the shrines are kind of like, I loved all the shrines and stuff, but like they just felt a bit more brighter. They suited the aesthetic and tone of the games, you know. Whereas at a dungeon, I feel then also bring back a lot more of those items, like the hook shot.
I like that
stuff.
Idea, actually. I like that idea.
And I think like people do miss those dungeons, and they, I don't know, they're just like, they could just create like, I don't know, like 8 of them or something, and just have them in the game, and they're deep. They're just like, there's a lot of use of these items that you have to go for again. Because I feel if they just throw a load of shrines and you just use the same kind of powers, it would be weird, because it would feel like Nintendo just sat down with just Breath of the Wild and just tweaked around a new couple of small ideas, you know?
Exactly. I think the good thing about Breath of the Wild is that it managed to show what you could do with just a small tool set and a bit of imagination. That was kind of one of its big successes, I think. Whereas if you then just do that again, maybe with some slightly different tools, but you go say that's the way we're going for. Yes, I guess it would technically be Breath of the Wild 2, but you kind of would want
technically be Immortals Phoenix Rising as well.
Well, yeah. I'd rather they went to your point. You don't have to go back, it has to have dungeons, but items link with dungeons quite well. So if you're gonna have dungeons, you're probably more likely to have items, and I think that for me, a better balance. Those, the fact that there was only four of those, what are their names? Those metal animal things. What are their
Divine
names?
Divine beasts.
The fact that there was only four of them, and they were very, very, they were clever, but they're quite short in terms
they,
of.
They were the worst bit of the game, really. Yeah. Like, the shrines are better.
So yeah, exactly. So I think
I have one of them was one of the hardest things I've played in a Zelda game personally. Like, do you know? They you really have to think, like, and I think that's
brutal.
They were, but I don't know, a short or snappy dungeon is kind of something I loved. I always missed the whole like looping back around, and you're like, oh, yeah. I'm here now again, and I've unlocked this area. I love that, and I missed that kind of.
Nintendo are really good at that. Like, they're really good at dungeon design. So like, say, like, you come back and you're like, that's why that's always been there this entire time. It's because I'm now back to here.
How much have you guys thought about? I mean, I assume it won't be called Breath of the Wild 2. Or maybe it will
It will.
But how much have you...
It's a continuation of the story.
I thought about this because of this question, and I'm just curious as to how much you guys have sat down and really actually thought about Breath of the Wild 2.
every second of the day.
Right, here's a question for you guys, because you know more about this franchise than me, because I'm not a great Zelda fan.
Chris, you said they behaved. And now I come back and everyone's...
This is
I didn't say I don't like.
No one asked the Zelda question. To us, Mick was the most misbehaved person.
I don't dislike Zelda. I'm not saying that. But my question is how many Zelda games are actual sequels to other Zelda games? Isn't this like some?
Oh, we're not getting into this. Zelda we're not getting into no, it's, so, chronology.
No, but it is in terms of. It's a good question in the sense of to answer. You're asking about Breath of the Wild 2. There is.
That's what I mean. Is it likely to be Breath of the Wild 2? Is it likely to be something new with a new incarnation of Link and Zelda?
Well, they called it Breath of the Wild 2,
didn't they? This is where my answer was going to go. So they came out and said with that. The one reveal that they've kind of done for
In fact,
it.
No, he said it the other day in that direct. He said, I know you wanted to hear news about Breath of the Wild 2.
So they have called it twice when they've referred to it as Breath of the
Wild
2.
Well, that's a sequel. That suggests to me...
Sequels. They normally do...
similar.
It's a bit like Mario.
It's Majora's Mask and Ocarina, isn't it?
Whereas there was Super Mario Galaxy 2.
But this is what I'm thinking now.
So I think it's, if I'm honest, it's going to be more like that because they keep referring to it, which is why everyone's thinking, well, it's going to be the same world and the same style, or at least nods to the world, if not the same world. Because otherwise, why call it Breath of the Wild 2? Just to say the next.
So then that's the question I wanted to get to, right? And this is a bit devil's advocate because I don't really know how I feel about this. But when I really sat down and thought about Breath of the Wild 2... The overwhelming feeling I had was similar to when I first heard about The Last of Us Part 2, in that my initial reaction was, I don't know that we need a sequel. You've got to remember with Switch, we got The Breath of the Wild and we got Mario Odyssey, two of the best games in those series, which are two of the best series ever, right? And... Mm-hmm. Since Odyssey, all we've had is, like, we've had the remakes, the re-releases. We've had Bowser's Fury, which maybe suggests there's some crazy shit going on at Nintendo. But really, I don't know what I want next. Because after I finished World for review, I played Odyssey through from start to finish again. And I realised that Odyssey is just, it's fucking magnificent, magnificent game. It's a beautiful game. Every element of it is just wondrous. And Breath of the Wild is similar. I don't know that I want... I kind of want the next thing. I want to know... Because when I played Odyssey, I thought, well, look, it's Mario. What can they have done? And then they blew me away. When I played Breath of the Wild, it's like, well, it's Zelda. What could they do? They somehow elevated any expectations you ever had of those games. I want that again. Mm. I don't need another Breath of the Wild. I had that in Phoenix Rising.
Going
off of the back of what like happened with Ocarina, going into Majora's Mask, taking Ocarina and then going, we're going to do this now and it's Majora's Mask and it's like pretty much the exact same game mechanics, all that's there. And then they did what they did with the gameplay as such, with the time and stuff. Like, I think 2 is going to really be like, whoa, like they're just not going to release Breath of the Wild 2.
I think it has to be.
And it'd be Breath of the Wild.
I can but see they Zelda could. Being it's... playable in it. I can see them.
Yeah,
they
think
could,
so too.
But it's not going to be.
I think it's Zelda's well, playable.
Like... But especially how the trailer.
Yeah, I think Zelda stars
both
in this
kind
game.
Of on equal footing, yeah.
Yeah, I think.
I agree. I think that. I think with something like Mario Galaxy 2, that yes, there was Yoshi and Cloud Marrow, whatever the other things they introduced, but like it was very much like this is Galaxy again. There's a couple of bits, but really it's just the same. It's still a really good game, by the way, but like it's not a brand new game, hence why the two. I think with a story that like Zelda, that probably more so than most other Zelda games, they've went down on the story in Breath of the Wild and the, you know, the 100 years previous and the characters a little bit more. They can't just release the same game again with a couple of new ideas.
They can. Switch sells, man. They can. I'm not saying they will.
They
should. We'll see. I guess that we can't. We are pure speculating now. Like we don't know.
Let's move on.
Deadbeat Prairie Oyster. I was watching a video earlier of a tree kangaroo, and now I need one as a pet. If you could rip any creature out of a game to have as a companion, what would it be, and how would you accommodate it? None of this sticking dragons in a shed. It's inhumane. Bonus points, as always, for Croc.
Oh, I was going to say a gaping dragon from Don't Have It in the Garden.
We've done a similar question to this, haven't we? But now we've got to decide where we're going to
stick. Yeah, we were saying Yoshi and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just read the questions.
So you answered Yoshi to this question about if you could have
I kind of answer Yoshi to most questions. What do you want for dinner? Yoshi.
Yoshi.
What pet would you have? Yoshi. What do you want to do tonight, darling?
For this question, I
want Roach from The Witcher 3 because wherever you are.
No,
you
see, I've got deja vu now because I'm pretty sure someone answered Roach and said you wouldn't want him because he'd be on the roof of the shed.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm sure we've done this.
We have had this question. I don't think we've said about where we'd put them.
Okay,
I want a dragon because I love dragons and my friends think I've shagged dragons. We had this conversation. and now I'm like,
we didn't have that conversation. No, I'll stop you there. I'm sorry.
Oh, we did.
We did.
Chris talking about saying that all his friends think he shagged dragons.
Was I there?
Yeah.
When he's playing something other than FIFA. No, I don't think so.
Okay, this explains it.
When you weren't here.
Must have been because I would remember your friend saying that you shag dragons because that would have been brought up at the start of this podcast.
You were there because you said Yoshi is your answer. I'm sure you did. So you must have been there.
Yeah,
but again, maybe there's just an assumption that I do answer Yoshi to a lot. Why is mix screen there? Green. Yoshi.
That's just a big Yoshi back.
Just a Yoshi. Mix very small. Yoshi's very big.
In fact, that's where he is. He's sleeping. He's been there all day.
Well, can you send him home? He's got chores to do.
If I had to accommodate, I'd have to go for something a bit smaller, wouldn't I? So maybe like a.
No, I think you have to keep your dragon. You said dragon the first time. I think you have to tell us where you're storing your dragon. I assume you've got land. You know, so where's.
So that's true. So I use.
Keep him in the east wing.
Jeeves will look after him and butler his anus.
Duck money. I use. What?
I said Jeeves will look after him and buttle his anus, as in he's a butler, he's butlering. Buttling? Is it buttling?
I don't know what the verb is. To buttle.
To buttle.
To buff or clean.
Yeah. Okay. His anus, the dragon's.
It's always the anus with you, isn't it?
Also buffing, something I get buttling. Said a lot about, yeah. Where's Yoshi?
He's buttling my anus.
So where's the dragon going?
I keep fidgeting.
Where's the dragon going?
I'll use the Spoon's McDuck money to build a massive dragon shed out back.
You've already got a fireproof dragon shed.
Where you keep your roll, where you keep your Scrooge McDuck money. Yeah, I'll put them in the dragon shed. There we go.
Yeah, doesn't go to the bank. It's got a big pile of money the dragon sleeps on.
Yeah, like Smaug and just like...
Yeah. Just turning round randomly going, Jeeves! Okay, so the dragon's in the shed.
Dragons in the shed, sitting on all my money. Yeah. There we go.
I said Yoshi, so Yoshi's just he's like a dog, isn't he? He's like a pet, like a dog. So that's easy. Anyone else? What's your pet? Where's he being looked after?
Are these specifically creatures from games, or are they just creatures
out of a game?
I'm gonna pick Polar from Crash Bandicoot.
Okay.
Oh, the little cute.
And where you keeping
there?
Him? Where yeah, you keeping him?
Banging. I don't know. I'm just gonna sit on him and do. I'm gonna sit on him and do a crash doors. Just gonna tear around the gaff.
Sure.
I can't even think of one.
But you said Roach. I just want to know where you would keep him.
Roach.
Well, Roach. On the roof, I guess.
Yeah. No, that's the answer. That is.
That's where he's going to be.
No, that's the answer.
Yeah.
That is the answer. Chris White's the only one who hasn't given us his animal.
Bowser.
Where. You keep Bowser.
Bowser. Whoa.
I think Jesus. Right. If you took Bowser out of that situation.
Just misunderstood is what you're saying.
Yeah, he would be glad to have a friend. Like, I'd be sick of hearing that little man, it's like just constant noises and colours and like, and he's just sick of it.
Sorry.
I bet he'd like
just to be clear.
Psychopathic kidnappers
just to be clear.
Just misunderstood.
Yeah. You think that Bowser's problem is that there are constant colours and noises.
No.
Okay,
no,
all right, sorry. I just
saying,
wanted to be
like,
absolutely clear
no,
about this.
No, but it's like, no, it's Mario, isn't it? And it is love for the woman he can't have. And I'd like to just help just ease his pain by watching some, like binge watching some shows. And
so you think Bowser's the victim?
Bowser.
No, you think
Bowser's the victim?
To name a creature, I'm just saying, I would pick Bowser. I don't want to go into his backstory. We all know he's struggled and.
Well, he kidnaps Princess Peach repeatedly against her
will.
Yeah,
I'd do that just to piss Mario off.
And so that you'd leave his son fatherless just so you could watch Netflix?
Yeah, I would.
Okay, all right.
I think at this point she's not really being kidnapped, is she?
No,
she's
something's
it.
Going on, isn't it?
She likes
she's had that right.
Every time
pot.
Mario catches him, she says, he kidnapped me again.
Oh, it's very much, Mario, wink, come and rescue me. Yeah. Isn't it? Like it's... But Chris, are you...
You've been cuckolded.
Are you... fucking hell. Are you like?
Would you be
genuinely...
ringing Mario when you've got Bowser on the couch?
Yeah.
Would you be ringing... She's fucking round here again, man.
Are you talking?
Like I've talked to him and he's not listening. You're gonna have to come and get her.
Are you talking like a little tortoise in a shell that you're pretending is Bowser or actual? Because you've played Bowser's Fury.
Not Bowser.
Bowser.
Not that Bowser's. Not in Bowser's Fury. Just Bowser. He just sat on the sofa with crisps on his stomach, just fall out his mouth, a beer in his hand. We'd watch the football.
Who would he support?
I'd be pretty sad.
Who would he support?
Nottingham Forest?
West Ham.
What?
Millwall.
There it is. That's correct. Jesus Christ. Millwall.
Yeah.
Millwall Bowser, they call him on the terraces. When he jumps up and down, the ball gets sucked in the back of the net. And then Chris calls Jeeves. And that's the end of the podcast. Thank you. Thank you
Why
very
am
much.
I there?
You
probably own the football team by
probably owns them. Yeah. Now listen, you asked for that. Let's be honest. You walked into it. You requested. Why am I there? You could have just gone. I'm going to say nothing. I think I've had enough. We've all had a laugh. I'm going to say nothing. But you just asked Mick to just. Mick's there. He's right there.
He's sticking up for himself.
But that's just a foolhardy endeavour, isn't it? Let's be honest. That's the end of the podcast. Yeah. That's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for watching, especially if you watched live. If you didn't, you can. We may do this. It's currently for our Patreons only. We may do it live, and then we'll put it back up again on the Monday. We'll do it live for everyone. See what we feel like. You can go to patreon.com/godisageek where you can obviously get access to this live and other videos live and other podcasts, code drops, all sorts of stuff. You can follow us on all social medias. It's just, it's at godisageek on all of those places. Make sure if you have suddenly somehow stumbled upon this video on YouTube that you click subscribe and hit the bell button so you don't miss another video or anything like that. Adam, Chris and Mick, thank you very much for your time this evening or whenever you are watching. And everyone else.
Thank you, Adam Cook.
We will speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.